The theme for the afternoon talk is the heart-mind-body connection. Heart-mind-body connection. Just recently I was speaking to a friend, a European friend, and she and her partner are living together in a flat apartment in Europe, and a difficulty has arisen between them. It's not an unusual one. Some of you in the hall will be all too familiar, as I have to say I have as well in the past. The good man, they're both in their early 30s. The good man would like to start a family, and the good lady doesn't feel that she's ready to start a family. So there are two different views. There is some polarization, of course, in the views. There is a gap, and in that gap, they are finding it hard currently to bridge the gap. He feels ready, she doesn't feel ready, and the consequence of this gap in feeling, in the heart, and in communication, that it deteriorates into an argument. And she said that the argument and the tension there, sometimes spoken and sometimes unspoken, is having an impact on her feeling life. And when, go from the particular here to the general, when human beings do not feel really nourished, through differences of view and differences of perception in this case, that gap between the two human beings, probably both, but the one I spoke to, said she feels the lack of nourishment, and the outcome of that lack of nourishment, she finds herself eating more when she doesn't really need to. And this she is finding some struggle with. It's such a common movement. And in the relationship that we have to our senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, the frequency of the movement to the tongue, because in the eating or in the drinking, it does provide some nourishment, but it's primary nourishment, of course, is for the body, and the secondary nourishment is for the enjoyment, the pleasure, which is natural and human. But there is that mindfulness and awareness, I, in this case the person referring to, feels that she is eating too much. And that then begins to have and generate from the self a view of self-judgment, self-criticism, self-blame. It's a difficult dynamic for women and men to actually be in. And one can look at this from a whole number of variety of ways, but from a kind of dharma, that means these teachings and practices here, the fact may be, because the good man isn't in a way getting what he would like at this time there, then can she actually develop and receive, this is important, nourishment from the other senses. And therefore, the use of the eyes to see that which is beautiful and that which one connects with, the ears to hear, the nose for smells, touch, movement, exercise, gardening, in the home, expressions of creativity. So first, we recognize, I feel a lack of nourishment in my life, in my heart. I feel there is something missing. The person who normally I would wish and I would love to be able to offer that so I can actually receive that, the actuality is currently that isn't being received. It or it may not be given. From the recognition of that, then comes a step. Nourishment is still needed. Human beings, we can't live without eating, but we can't live without the heart's nourishment either. And in that, I need to address and look at where can the nourishment come. And as I say, sometimes, as we know, it can come from seeing that which we appreciate, the nature, the stars above, the flowers, the contact with the world, the acts of appreciation. We can hear it sometimes in the music, in the creatures, the birds, in the varieties of the sounds of the day, in the lovely smells which are available, in meditations, in silences, in stillnesses, in the application of use of the body. So it recognizes what is missing, recognizing nourishment is needed, it's indispensable for human existence. Where can it come from? Both from around, what we see and hear and touch and so forth, and also sometimes from within as well. And if we have a quiet and sustained commitment to that, one of the ways that it will show itself and its confirmation is I stop blaming the other and I stop blaming myself. If I feel nourished as a human being, even though it's not coming from a person or persons who I would wish it to come, but I still feel nourished because I recognize the place and the importance of the heart in life, and I'm receptive to that, I'm mindful of that, I'm open to that. I'm not going to feel I need to attack my partner or my friend or my family or colleagues or whatever, because I know I've got other accesses, other ways to feel nourished in life. The arts, music, creativity, dance, nature, indoors, outdoors, in the city, at home, here, there. Those resources we need to pick up on. It will make the life of the partner a lot easier. Simple. And it will make one's own life a lot easier as well. But it's important with these areas of the heart there that we keep alive inside of us our awareness and to feel what gives us support. And sometimes, and it's natural enough, but unhealthy, we have become, as creatures, far too dependent on an individual. Oh, it's a nightmare living like that. I imagine only you, whoever the you may be, is the only one who's going to make me happy. That may not be in that you, that other, the other, capability at the time. She or he may have so much stuff going on, they haven't got time for us. And then we're putting pressure, I need your time, I need more contact with you, I need to be closer to you, I need your attention. And when we start getting agitated because of the strength of the desire upon the other, frankly, it's hardly encouraging, is it? Who wants to hang around and offer a lot of love to somebody who is harassing us, who is giving us a hard time? The person is not likely to say, oh, darling, you're right. Your moaning, complaining, shouting, anger has really touched me, and I just feel so much love for you. You'll be lucky. You know, you're not married to a saint, you know. No, the thought will be, get me out of here. So our response in a relationship to another doesn't guarantee the response of the other. But kindness is more, and love is more likely to invite kindness and love than anger. I mean, it's not, one doesn't have to be a rocket scientist, is what I mean. I mean, can't we get this little act of that single thing together? Can't we just remember that? If we just remember that, life is a picnic. Well, not quite, but at least it's on its way. All right. The relationship of heart, mind, and body is an inseparable relationship. I should add for these talks, by the way, like everywhere else, please sit up. It's a request. In the hall, the dead are allowed to be horizontal. In my world, it's a poor excuse. All right. Sometimes, in our relationship to ourselves, the interplay and the interconnection of heart, mind, and body are such, and it's fairly obvious, are inseparable from each other. And this inseparability means that any event which takes place will not be absolutely isolated in your life or my life from the other. So I might be feeling a lot, coming back to the heart. There's a lot of feeling which is going on in my life at the present time. But the feeling, though it's the priority, will not be separate from the thinking. And as we know, I'll give you a good example in a minute, as the feeling arises, for it to sustain itself, it will require thinking. And the very thinking has its impact on the feeling. And if you can follow, I know it's a hot day. If you're English, it's a very hot day. And in the feeling, the thoughts that go with those feelings, those thoughts are critical. They are profoundly significant. The feelings may be arising. You might be feeling incredibly happy, lots of joy and vitality and energy. I know, not on the first day of a retreat, but you may have remembered it. So there's a lot of joy and happiness which is flowing through the being there. Sometimes, the water's around. No wonder it's sometimes a shortage of precious hope. A shortage of water in this part of the world. One has to drink it all. Hello. You can tell managers and teachers were a weak lot. All right, thanks for the water. Nice. Years ago, I climbed in the midsummer. Only a man, an Englishman, and his girlfriend would do it. Mount Sinai. I always remember we drank between the bottom and the top, between us, something like 10 litres of water, and we were still thirsty. So there is the feeling, I can't remember what I'm talking about here. There is the feeling which is arising, emotion, it might be a difficult one. There's anguish, there's anxieties, there's a painful story going on in one's life. There's just outbursts of crying and tears, there one feels unhappy and so forth. The feelings are not, and the thought, it would seem like, but not necessarily true, that the thoughts are a confirmation and a description of the feelings, of the emotion, of the heart. There's the heart, and then the thoughts come about it. Well, a story comes about it. Views and opinions come about it. But the thoughts about may or may not be helpful. There is no guarantee that the way you are thinking about what's going on in your feelings, in your heart, is in any way supportive. It might actually be feeding the problem. In the idea of, gosh, I want to get out of this painful story, or this, all these feelings and emotions about this issue that I have going on with me, I may have the idea that my thoughts are helping me to understand. You'd be lucky. The thoughts that are going on about the event, the situation, the heart, in the name of trying to chill out and cool out over it, it could be the equivalent of putting wood on the fire. No, not wood, that wouldn't be strong enough. Petrol. In the name of my thinking is trying to resolve the issue. So I explore, I recognize what my heart is doing or what my feelings are doing, pleasurable or painful. But if I'm going to be a mindful, conscious human being, I'm going to be extraordinarily clear about what the thought is saying. Is the thought helpful? I'll give you an example. I was telling Sanjit about this yesterday. Does everybody know the word hiccup? What's the Hebrew word?
Shihuk.
Shihuk. Shihuk. Almost sounds like a hiccup, doesn't it? All right. So this is a small personal story. And out of this event, I don't want to sound like I'm showing off, I've become a small authority on hiccups. Tell you, there's nothing quite like experience in life. You know, it's so easy to advise the other. So, sometime in July, a couple of months ago, having my rice, dal, and sabji. If you don't know what rice, dal, and sabji is, you haven't been to India. If you haven't been to India, you should be asking yourself here, well, why haven't I been? Anyway, it's another story. So I had my rice, dal, and sabji, and as most of us know, including this poor Walla, that one should wait at least 2 hours before doing any exercise. You know, it's fairly, let the food digest and then you undo the exercise. You know, it's simple. But some of us are thick. One of them is sitting talking at the moment. So after a little while, maybe an hour or so, at home, I had loads and loads of energy was coming. Say my kundalini was rising, but at least there was lots of energy was around. And I thought, oh, I'll do some aerobics, some exercise, and that. And right in the middle of it, of bringing all this extra oxygen in, hiccuping started. And it's fairly common. With Christopher, it lasted, this is true, 8 days. Not 8 minutes. Not 8 hours, 8 bloody days it went on. It's not easy talking when you're hiccuping. I don't know if you know. I have people to talk to and then, what the hell's going on, Christopher? Etc. And then one goes to bed at night, lies down, etc. And then eventually the body gets so tired, so one falls asleep, and after a little while, etc. So all this is going on. So I thought, and then I Googled it. That's what one does. Like I was having a coffee with a couple of friends of mine. And my friend said to me, Christopher, what happens after we die? And I said, Google it. Google everything, got it. So I Googled it, I promise you. I used every method that anybody has put on Google. You know, I drank the cup water backwards, I held the breath, I did my yoga headstand, I did lots of deep breathing, I ate raw jam, that was one, that would cure it, no it didn't, raw honey, that was another one, lemon water, that was another, I mean I did everything. Hiccuping took no notice, it had a life of its own there. So then I went to see the physician. I didn't feel I was dying, but I didn't really. No, I'm hiccuping again. Could you tell me what I should do, please? And then she said, well, I can only prescribe this, but Christopher, I would advise you not to read the side effects. And the side effects, the list of them, etc. Dryness, tiredness, exhaustion. Then one looked at what the pills were for, and it was for pills who have mental health problems, schizophrenia, and a few other things. I think. And she said, but it's a very good muscle relaxant. I said, but doctor, I'm in the muscle relaxant business. I'm a meditation teacher. I said, I'm feeling fairly relaxed. All right. Anyway, so then I went to see the proper doctor, who's the complementary, and in the local health shop, and he provided me with a root. Take 30 drops. If you want to, I'll get you the name in case you have hiccuping history or something. And I took the 30 drops. This is true. It stopped. Hallelujah. Allah is merciful. It stopped for 5 hours. But it was, you know, God, wow, there's life on earth. I'm not walking around like a zombie. You know? Not sure if I'm asleep or awake, etc. Come to the point. So there's feelings, there's hiccuping. And then the terror of the thought arose. And in the midst of it, the thought arose, how long will this go on for? Which I also Googled. One person in the US, 6 decades of hiccuping. Well, at least I know it's not going to be 6 decades for me. And the thought carried with it a little agitation. You see? The thought, how long will it go on? When will it stop? And that thought, if the self identifies with the thought, oh my God, it's never going to stop. How long is it going to go on for? That thought will generate more pressure. And what will more pressure do? More hiccuping. So at least I've done enough practice. Maybe just enough, but enough. Just to be mindful of the extra thought about the future, which I didn't need, because it wouldn't help. And then on the 8th day, it stopped. It was lovely. A whole new world suddenly opened up. And then the next day, I had to take the train to France. We have this going under the English Channel, or French Channel, better. And to the Alps, where we had the walk. Still extremely tired. And then having to do the walk, 150 of us doing this yatra, this pilgrimage, there and there. But the energy starts to come in, and I only use it. The central point is, when there is an issue going on in your life, please be very mindful and alert of the thought, sometimes the fearful thought which arises about the future. That fearful thought is not helpful. It feeds it. That is the wood on the fire. And we just want to catch that, because if we don't and we grab it, it will inflame the situation. And we still have to deal with it, but it's even stronger. During the day here, with good meditations and so forth, it genuinely is not an easy undertaking. It's a rather odd situation where it genuinely can be hard, difficult to really be with ourselves. Even though perhaps quite regularly we are quite happy to be out of the company of others. But easily as well, we can find ourselves, while alone, engaging in an activity, whatever, all the social media stuff and all the entertainment stuff, in which, in the actuality, we are neither with others, but actually we're not with ourselves either. We're with this self, which is engaged in a lot of doing, but there happens to be nobody else around. So when you and I, as here, are willing to put the other around, apart from the social media, all the entertainment stuff, all the things that we might have to do at home, and so on and so forth, and then really come back to ourselves, genuinely, honestly, with no distraction, that is a challenge. The consciousness is not used to it. It is not used to a proper, authentic aloneness. Even though, like myself and a number of you, live alone, but does that actually mean living and finding the aloneness? And when that happens, the life of the human being will stand out that much more. If you, like us, we're sitting still, and it's a personal preference, you know, cross-legged, or the kneeling, or the use of the chair, that doesn't matter, it's a personal preference. But in any of the postures, in this case with the sitting posture, if you have some interest in being with the body and being still, the life of the body will stand out more. You will experience more sensations, more vibrations, more aches and pains, places of tension, of warmth. There will be places in the physical constitution where you put your mindfulness and attention and perhaps you don't feel anything there. There will be, in some of the pain that arises, some natural wish to change the posture there. All of that's part of the physical. And sometimes, because of the messages from the mind, or as our beloved neuroscientists tell us, from the brain, and then this lovely word, the neural pathways, which I love. We have enough pathways in life anyway, but anyway, so I have some more now. Neural pathways there. When there is pain going on in the body, wherever it might be, the neurology, shall we call it, the mind, the thought, the view, will tend to interpret the pain in the body exclusively as a physical event, separate from thought, separate from emotions, separate from any story. This is a purely physical phenomena. I'm feeling pain in my knees. I'm feeling, there's lots of popular spots. I'm feeling pain in my lower back. I'm feeling pain in my in the tensions here and all the other parts of the body. So the relationship, say consciousness, and pain. The view is, if I wasn't sitting like this, sitting still, trying to be a Buddha or whatever, if I wasn't sitting like this, I wouldn't be having this pain. Therefore, the pain is caused by the posture. And that seems obvious, and scientific evidence shows that, because when I hear the sweet music of the bell, the most wonderful sound of the day that I hear, because it's announcing the end of the sitting, I move my legs, I'm out of this horrible nightmare Guantanamo Bay imprisonment posture. I'm out and there's no pain. So the view, this is where you've got to be careful, the view is the pain has been caused by the posture. And that's why there is pain in the body, because when I change the posture, the pain is gone. Human beings have to be a little careful about the view. It may not be quite that true, no matter what the mind says and what the evidence shows itself. To give you a fairly dramatic example, genuinely, we had a young guy teaching in the US. He was actually a priest, Jesuit priest, and in his late 20s, lovely, absolute sweetheart he was, handsome guy, but he'd been in a railway accident and had lost both legs. They were amputated above the knees. So, not easy. He would come in the wheelchair into the Dharma hall, get out of the wheelchair, sit there, can't sit cross-legged, you don't have any legs to cross. Sit there, and in the one-to-one, he said to me, you'd be sitting, and even though it was several years since he'd lost the legs, he was feeling pain in the knees, strong pain in the knees. And he said he had to open his eyes up to check that he had no legs, therefore he had no knees. And there's this phenomenon, it's an extreme, of course, one, of what in those days was called the phantom. The phantom image, that the power of the memory can be so strong that the mind projects a reality, feels it as sensation and pain, and it's not there. In the same way, the pain which you and I may be experiencing in the body, yes, of course, it may have some relationship to the biological, physical component construction in the knees or in the back or in the head or in the hands or stomach or wherever. But it may not. It may not be a biological event at all. It may be the mind. And one common expression of that in the mind is, the mind is feeling pressure. And the pressure has to go somewhere. And it will go to a place or point in the body. And what one is experiencing is not the physical, but the pressure in the mind, pressure for the sitting to be over, the pressure to get rid of the pain, the pressure to relax, whatever. That pressure lands in a location in the body. It genuinely has an impact on the physical, but the physical is not causing it. The mind is a bigger influence there. And sometimes in the hall, as some of you will know or will find out, you're sitting in meditation, And for the, you don't believe in God, but for the first time in your life, you're praying for the sitting to be over. And you might even start off with the thought, well, if there is a God up there, please make the time go by more quickly, you see, etc. And sometimes the God or the no God might answer prayers and might not, etc. The gods are sitting up here, by the way. We've got the power. So one is waiting for the end of the sitting. It's an important moment in life. In that moment, as I mentioned, sometimes there is the relief. The pressure for something to finish is over. Sometimes the pressure for something to finish is over takes all the pressure out of the body. And all that pain and struggle, oh God, how long is it going to go on for? Why do I have to join these sadomasochistic clubs, etc.? And then it comes to the end, and oh, one hasn't changed the posture, the bell has gone, the pressure is gone, you're sitting there like a Buddha, waiting for the others to leave, because you know if you keep sitting like this, they'll be incredibly impressed. If it was just a physical event, no amount of would make a scrap of difference. This doesn't do miracles. So can we, in the relationship of heart, thought, pressure, and the body, get to know ourselves well enough to see what's impacting on what? Not to rush to the conclusion. Life is a little bit more complex than what we sometimes think. In the midst of all of this events of heart, mind, mind meaning thought, heart meaning feelings and emotions, body meaning the physical, in the midst of all of this, there is a rather phenomenal little construction which emerges it, pardon me, which seems like the glue which holds it together. It is called the self. It is called I, me, my. So all this little event is going on, body, heart, feelings, thoughts, states of mind, consciousness, meaning being conscious, being mindful. All this makes us up. This is what it is to be a human being. All this makes us up. And in the midst of all of this, there is this funny phenomena called I. The I is there. It's like the link up, the glue, sometimes very sticky, which is holding all this baggage together, and then I am in the middle of it. And this poor old I sometimes seems to be on the receiving end of it all. So the I springs up there, and then the body is hurting. There's pain in the body. You could be the Buddha of the Buddhas, there'll still be pain in the body at times. And there's pain in the body, and then the I arises. Oh, my body, like a possession. This is my body. Why am I hurting so much? Why is my body giving me so much problems and trouble? So then we feel attacked by the body. We feel oppressed by it. God, it's giving me, such a hard time. But the same thought can arise with thoughts and feelings as well. So there's the self. And sometimes we feel under attack. So the thoughts, I am no good, I never get anything right, I'm a hopeless meditator, what am I doing here? I never get anything done properly. I can't sit still for 30 seconds. I. So there is the I arising. The I, so to speak, is we're not getting what we want. And when we're not getting what we want, we give ourselves a hard time. One could spend a lifetime like that. I want, I don't get, I give myself a hard time. I want again, I don't get, I give myself a hard time. I mean, there's got to be something more to life than that, surely. So can I, just not easy, but it's a great challenge, can I learn to be with and explore the physical event? Explore the feelings and emotions there. Recognize the thoughts which come with just enough clarity to ask myself, is this, am I, or is this body, or whatever, is the view this body is giving me a hard time, is this the only way of looking at it? Is the view my feelings and emotions are giving me a hard time? Is this the only way to look at it? This story, this thinking that's going on. Is there another way to look at it other than I'm giving myself a hard time? How am I doing for time? Talk about hard time. Once I start to look a little fresh, in a fresh way, it might open up the door to a fresh way of looking. What's that lovely Leonard Cohen one-liner, great one-liner about there's a dark and then the light comes in?
The crack.
There is a crack in everything. That's where the light gets in. If you, no matter what music you listen to in your whole life, this is the one-liner you never should forget. It's far more important than your Ten Commandments and all these other things. It's where there is a crack in everything, that's where the light gets in. It's a masterpiece of poetry, I have to say. Bless Leonard for it. So, if I say, gosh, my mind gives me a hard time, my emotions give me a hard time, my body gives me a hard time, she or he or they give me a hard time. And then I ask, is there or are there other ways to look at it? That's the crack. Get it? That's where the light will get in. We're interested in the light. I don't want to sound too esoteric, but you know what I mean. We're interested in the light, as the dear Buddha in his realization under the tree in Bodh Gaya, first statement that came out of that, he said, there was light. I saw the light, you know, you woke up. Therefore, the crack had opened up. And it's this crack, this opening up, to see in fresh ways is what this practice is about, because it's liberating. And honestly, there's not a lot to work with, is there? Body? Some feelings and emotions? Some thoughts? And our connection with the world around? I mean, it's not that much. So let's crack things open. Let the light in. Okay, thank you. Let's have a quiet moment, shall we? beings live mindful lives. May all beings explore the connection between feelings, thoughts, body, and the world around. May all beings live with love and liberation.